You could have been anywhere else right now, but you decided to choose this podcast to listen to. Let me say this. My name is Antonio Laborte, the host of the show. Thank you guys so much. If you do tune in, if you have tuned in before, that you keep doing so, and it's greatly appreciated. And I love the support, and I love you guys for listening and following this whole thing. This is a new episode for you guys. I hope that you enjoy it. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for supporting. I really appreciate it. All right, peace. So if y'all watch the NBA Finals, y'all know that Giannis Antetokounmpo has now become an NBA champion, Finals MVP, continuing to silence the haters, silencing a lot of the criticisms, even some of the criticisms that I had about him and that team. But, you know, man, congrats to him, first of all. First and foremost, congrats to him and the Milwaukee Bucks for, you know, doing what they had to do, beating the teams that they had to beat. You know, you could talk about injuries and all that, but hey, they did what they had to do, right? They did what all the other teams were supposed to do, win games, beat teams, right, in a seven-game series, and they did that. So, you know, congrats to them. But this is going to be about Giannis for a little bit, right? I'm going to do a little quick thing about Giannis. Giannis Antetokounmpo has lived a full life in just 26 years of living. I'm going to share a story about him that I heard reporters talk about and saw in some news article about, you know, part of his journey to becoming an NBA player, right? So one story goes like this. And this is directly from the article, by the way. I'm just going to read it off. In December, Antetokounmpo took a taxi from his suburban Milwaukee home to a nearby Western Union. It was game day, and Antetokounmpo wanted to wire some money to his family in Athens before heading to the arena. He went to the ATM, withdrew some cash, and sent it. When he went back to take out more for the cab fare, he discovered he had reached his limit. Panicked, Antetokounmpo decided to run the two or so miles to the Bradley arena. A young married couple pulled up alongside him. They said, "Are you the Bucks rookie?" that they asked. "Yes," Antetokounmpo said. "Do you need a ride?" "Yes, please," Giannis replied. He hopped into the backseat of the SUV and got dropped off at the front of the arena and went inside to play. That's a crazy story. Like, you know, because you think about the lifestyle that some of these NBA players have, right? And even before they make it, you know, not every single person comes from a good home, but more and more recently, as the years go on, you see that some of these kids are getting a little bit even better treatment, you know? That's not to say that it's not difficult for them, that their home lives aren't challenging, or that some of them are going through hard times. But, like, you know, and this is a good thing. Like, you're seeing a positive trend, and like some of these kids getting better treatment even when they're at the college level, and you know, and even when they make it to the NBA. Giannis' story is, you know, a kid with pretty much nothing, you know, an uphill battle the entire time he's growing up, to becoming, you know, arguably the biggest star in the NBA right now, you know? I'm going to give you a little backdrop of Giannis' story, okay? Giannis Antetokounmpo and his four brothers, two of which, Thanasis and Kostas, who are also in the NBA, and a third, Alex, who was actually getting a workout read this week by the Indiana Pacers. But there's four of them, the sons of Nigerian immigrants who grew up in Greece with very little money to their name. And it's important to note that they weren't technically Greek citizens, and they weren't given any, like, government support or assistance, which pretty much left them, like, stateless, left them extremely difficult to provide for themselves and really get any kind of income from, like, a steady job or anything like that. So Giannis and his brothers ended up selling, like, merchandise, like watches and hats and things like that, on the streets near Sepolia, where they grew up. And they tried to earn some cash for their family. You know, they're doing that for some years, and, you know, but there's a local basketball coach who, by the name of, I think, Spiros, I think it was, when I was watching the video, who was in search of younger talent. And he had once tried to find and recruit Giannis's older brother, Thanasis, who he had saw, I think, playing around in the park some years ago, and he was trying to, you know, come back around and see what he was up to. But that was unsuccessful. But he did stumble across the younger three brothers, and one of which was Giannis. And he tried to get Giannis to play, but initially he turned it down because he had no interest in basketball. Like, he was just invested in soccer, which is crazy. I didn't even know that. Like, he was not even really trying to play basketball like that. Like, he was trying to make it as a football player. You know, that's what the actual name is. But, but when Giannis was, when Giannis met this coach, right, he said that he'd have to make a deal with him. If Coach Spiros would hook his parents up with some jobs, right, would get some income for them, Giannis would play basketball for him. So a deal was made where his parents were earning about, I think it was like 500 euros a month, and Giannis would have to play basketball. Giannis ended up leaving and joining this team like several times, you know, before he came into his own pretty much and started becoming a solid basketball player. You know, and he found himself sleeping at that gym too that they practiced at pretty often. Like, even, you know, when he was kind of going back and forth, like, when he was there, like, he, you know, it didn't make sense for him to go home, you know, because he didn't want to have to take that walk back all the way to the house just to walk back again. So, like, when he was playing, I mean, he was there day and night. I mean, he was at the gym, you know. He eventually played professionally in Greece and got his chance at the NBA when he was drafted, I think it was 15th back in 2013. I remember NBA on TNT did a mini documentary about him. It's called Finding Giannis, if you ever want to watch it on YouTube. And his story is just incredible. Just to see from where his all his brothers were able to stay together, which is crazy. All of them were able to make it out and kind of help each other, help the family. And I think that's just, you know, it's crazy. Like, even now, like, listen, he's done commercials. He's been, you know, kind of active on, like, social and things like that. He's been offered roles in movies. He's been mentioned in songs by Lil Wayne and Kanye. Like, his personality is hard to not like. The common theme seems to be that the way that he carries himself is like, very respectable and worth giving praise. Like, you don't have to remind him where he's from, because he does that enough on his own. He knows his past and where he's been, and knows how special it is to be in the position he's in. In some way, there's luck involved, of course. But by also setting out to become someone worthy of earning the money and respect he deserves, like, you got to give him that credit, you know? And just for a moment, I'm gonna put to the side his, like, personal and off-the-court stuff and just mention how he's developed over the last decade. Like, I've been and still am critical of Giannis in ways that I think are fair, but still recognize that he's a top-five player, and you can't deny that now. You know, he's a top-five player in this league, like, solidified. But just from having no desire to touch a basketball at age 13 and then end up putting it together enough to make an NBA roster 18 is outstanding. And to go from where he was in the league, right, to someone who can now drop 30, 15, and 5 and 5 blocks in about 30 minutes of play, that's close to impossible as you can get. Like, just to even imagine that, like, that's just, it's crazy, you know? If you put him in the league 12, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 25, 30 years ago, there wouldn't be a flaw in his game. Like, there would almost be no takeaways that you could have on him. He'd be just as freakish, if not more, than he is now. And I think he gets downplayed, you know, because of his situation with Milwaukee, his early personal success, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I shouldn't say early, but, you know, the personal success that he's had in the league. And because of the success and his past shortcomings in the playoffs, he was given a quick write-off. You know, it was almost like, okay, you're getting all these awards, but what is it translating to, you know? And a lot of those players have, too, on that team. But Giannis, of course, taking the brunt of it. And Budenholzer right there with him, too. But after these playoffs, man, it's hard for any hating-ass fan to really come up with a reason why he isn't thrown in that conversation for best in the league. He's put up a good case for himself, and his resume already earns him a spot as, like, a guaranteed Hall of Famer. Oh, and he dropped 30 and 10 multiple times in the finals. After his knee pretty much switched places with his hamstring. Like, his knee went so far backwards, like, this shit looked, I was like, damn, like, how is he even walking right now? I thought he was done. I thought he was finished. You know, and he's only 26, like, that's the crazy part. Like, if he stays healthy, you could have another 8 to 10 years in the league. You can have another decade of just dominating the league. How do you stop that? KD was saying that this is my favorite player. KD said that. You could argue KD's, even after his Achilles, that he's the best player, if not one of the best players. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, congrats to Giannis, man. And, you know, I'm going to have to rewatch that series too, just to get an idea of, like, who he is as a person, you know, because it's like, it's hard to hate that dude, man. And for any true fan, like, it would be an awesome thing to see him continue the success and see what he can do moving forward, man. So, congrats to the Bucks. Of course, you know, Pelicans are right there. You know what I mean? The Pelicans are going to be there. You know, give them time. They're making moves right now. You know, they got some things cooking up. We got Zion. I don't know for how long, but we got Zion. But congrats to Giannis, though, and the Bucks, man, for making it an interesting and fun finals to watch. All right, so, like, a few weeks ago, I was talking about Shaqiri Richardson being pretty much subjected to the anti-doping policy of the Olympics and how dumb the whole punishment was and how it shouldn't have even went down like that. I also went into how CBD is essentially not prohibitive. Pretty much, you know, it gets a pass for these athletes when it comes to drugs in the Olympic space, you know. And although I understand it, it's interesting to see the direction that the Forbes article took when it was coming up with the story about the new and edgy treatment, you know, these athletes are taking. I mean that ironically, because it's definitely not. One of the voices that was leading, like, the whole point of this article, right, was the fact that it was centered around Megan Rapinoe and her sister, who had this pretty much a CBD company, and they were getting interviewed by one of these Forbes journalists about the whole thing. And of course, Twitter was outraged. You know, criticisms of Megan Rapinoe came flooding in about how it was, like, almost hypocritical and, like, not a good move for her to do this news story, and how this news story was coming out just weeks after Shaqiri got hit with, you know, the suspension, which pretty much blew her chances at receiving any kind of medal, you know, for the Olympics. The person who wrote the article is AJ Harrington. He writes this. He says, "For the first time in the Olympics, 125-year modern history, elite athletes are being open about their use of cannabis products to prepare them for the world's biggest stage in sports. Leading the charge is Olympic gold medalist and U.S. soccer women's national team star Megan Rapinoe, who incorporates CBD into her training routine using products from Mendy, a company founded by her sister Rachel Rapinoe and Brett Schwager." So what needs to be understood is just a quick few points, okay? CBD is not on WADA's prohibitive substance list, right? The World Anti-Doping Agency. It was taken off in 2017. The Olympics are allowing, they're pretty much allowing an Olympic athlete to be proactive about her usage of a particular drug, which only in recent culture has been classified as, like, rehabilitative rather than simply someone smoking on some narcotic. And of course you can't hide from the fact that there's a black woman got stripped of her Olympic opportunity and is now being the face of these harsh criticisms about something that's virtually the same thing that Megan Rapinoe and these other athletes are doing. Right now, I don't think Megan Rapinoe should hold the blame for all this. I think it would have been in her best interest to just keep this interview in the drafts, you know, at least until the Olympics blew over. And the company was founded by her sister too, so you'd think there would be some type of, like, media team assessing, like, the right time to post this, but this is just very, very bad timing. Not just for the Rapinoe sisters, but for the Olympics too. Now Forbes published the magazine, so it's not like the Olympic Committee had any type of control over if and when a story like this would be created, of course, but it just shows how foolish and backwards, like, this whole situation is regarding Shaqiri and marijuana at this point. Like, if we're deciding between someone getting suspended or someone getting, you know, front page press on this, like, you know, little fun, you know, quirky newsprint based on, you know, what's pretty much a slight difference found in the same marijuana plant. Like, it's the same plant. It's just different structure. It's different parts of the structure. Like, if that's what it comes down to, we need to rediscuss this whole issue. Like, you know, and for y'all who listened to the last podcast, what did I say about the criteria that a substance goes through to see if it's worth banning? Do y'all remember? Let me tell you what it was. Ready? It was the three things. It was, it was the substance has to represent a potential health risk to the athlete, has to be seen as something that can enhance their performance, or it violates the spirit of the sport. The fucked up thing about this is that technically CBD does help enhance performance. Like, there is more supposed benefits and research behind CBD on its own than the psychoactive part of the weed. You know what I mean? Just generally, that's what people accept too. Like, they're like, yeah, CBD is beneficial, and the other stuff just gets you high. Like, technically, CBD does enhance performance. Maybe not directly. Maybe it doesn't help you run or play better, but it helps you recover faster. Like, so technically, you know, that enhances performance. You know, CBD qualifies for two of these things more relatively than marijuana on its own does. The CBD stuff, at least, you know, according to the article, it says that it's staying back home in the U.S. for now. Harrington was talking about how, you know, they can't bring that stuff over there. He said, but while the athletes have been using CBD leading up to the competition, they will not be able to bring with them to Japan the gummies and the topical sticks that they've been relying on for relief from the stress and strain of competing, given the regulatory environment that makes taking products made from cannabis, including hemp, across international borders risky, and Japan's strict anti-cannabis laws. It's safer to just leave their CBD regimen at home. So pretty much because of Japan as a country, because of Japan, not because of the Olympics, because of Japan, they're not going to be able to get in carrying that cushion brand narcotic, that third grade narcotic, and getting semi-high, you know, after their events or games. Like, because of what the customs of the country, they won't do it. But, like, you know, and it's just like, damn, like, this is just bad timing. Like, the optics don't look good on this at all. And I would definitely feel some type of way if I was Shikari, because it does feel distasteful. And it does feel like it's a slap in the face. But, like, a minor difference in the structure of the weed, it's the same weed, just a different part of it, has given one athlete and her sister some publicity, right? Some good publicity. And it gave Shikari a spot on the couch. And insults on Twitter. You know what I mean? Talking about how she's stupid or ungrateful for the position she's in. Like, it's just... And again, this isn't necessarily Megan Rapinoe's fault, but, like, something in her should have known, like, how the story would have looked if it came out, like, the way that it did. Like, unless she just ain't give a fuck, like, then I don't see how you couldn't catch that if you're her or your sister. Like, I don't know. But again, you can't run from the fact that there's a clear difference in what's to be expected by both of these athletes now. We know the kind of image that will be put on one of them and the image another one gets. One gets handed, you know, a paintbrush and a pat on the back and says, go ahead and, you know, create this little story for us. The other one is told to turn their back. Expected to take what's coming to them, that suspension, like. You know, and if you know, you know. You know, just a different game we got plugged in into the TV. That's all. Different set of glasses we got on. And I would hate to, you know, I don't think that that's the case, you know, as far as what's going on. But you can't help but think about it. You know, you can't help but think how the optics look about it, you know. But if any positive is taken from this, you know, if anything from this, is that the anti-doping agency and the Olympics see how this needs to be changed, like, to avoid a situation like this, like we have here, you know, where assumptions may and could and probably should be made about the circumstances of certain athletes getting praised or punished on something that's virtually the same thing. That's what needs to change quickly too. So on a more positive and like personal note, like my boy Jay has been skating a lot more over like what might be like maybe a month or 6 weeks now, I believe, something like that. And it's just dope, man, just to see like the improvements being made literally day by day and minute by minute. Like, and for selfish reasons, I'm actually glad he started to do it as often as he does, because, you know, I've been meaning to get out and shoot some shots with my camera too that I've had for like years now, but I just haven't really put much use to it like I envisioned I would, like when I first wanted to get it, you know. And so it's sort of like a win-win situation for the both of us, like with me taking like a double win in the process. Like, you know, I'm not up in Jersey all that often, and I see him even less now than I did before. And so to be able to just like kick it with him for like a few hours, maybe like once or twice a week, you know, for what's been the last like month or so, you know, it was something that I've been like, you know, thankful for. And the community of kids and the adults too that are out there has been pretty amazing. And I don't feel like I'm overstating that. You know, a lot of the people are just understanding, down to earth, just cool to talk to. And I have the joy of watching them also start to put like new things together and get better at what they're doing. Some of these guys and gals, you know, they get on their boards and do these insane, incredible things that look so effortless when you watch them. And just the other, just like last week, Jay sent me this location to this one spot, up in Long Branch. It's a sight to see, man. It's a beautiful part. The beach is right by it. It just brings like a completely different energy. And when I had met him there, he already stopped by earlier in the day, and he came back a second time around, and we was there for a few hours. Probably left around like 8:30, and I had gotten there around 5:30, a half hour, maybe 45 minutes after he was already there. And he was doing his thing, you know, chopping it up with some of the other skaters that were there too. And what got me inspired to actually make this session of the podcast was when Jay started to help this younger kid out, who was there. I think his name was Misha. I ended up talking to him after us, taking some videos of him too. Nice kid. Just very, very thankful too for what Jay was doing. And of course, if you know Jay, like, there wasn't any like condescending tone or looking down on this kid, like, but just understanding like where he was coming from and knowing that what he had already learned, like what Jane had already learned, could be passed on to Misha. You know, what would only make the kid feel better about his skating moving forward, pretty much. And so this kid, you know, was having some trouble with a certain drop in move, and just could use some slight help with his technique. And in like a matter of minutes, like, you could just see his confidence like sort of flipped. It was awesome to see. Like, you could see it in the way he was, you know, riding around. He had spent more time in the bowl than when we had first got there. Like, and it's just cool to see like what immediate impact everyone there could have on each other. Whether it's just observing what each person can do or helping each other get better, like Jay was doing with Misha, and I'm sure that others have done with Jane also. You know, so what, you know, what stands out is the camaraderie, the willingness to help each other and encourage each other to do something new, or to keep trying it, like at a certain trick, or to go for that difficult move, or whatever it may be, you know. And of course, not everyone's like chatting it up, but even for the people who are sort of like doing their own thing, there's a kind of like respect that's had, and an understanding that everyone is starting somewhere and working through their own progression, just like everyone else has and will continue to do as long as they're there. And so to be able to capture people doing what they enjoy, some being happy with learning what may seem like basic moves to others, right, but were so difficult to get down. Some people who are testing their boundaries and doing these what seem to be like dangerous but like overly impressive tricks. Some who've brought their kids and are teaching them a little bit about skating, just getting the board underneath their feet, just to sort of be like a fly on the wall who happens to have a camera recording all this stuff, all these little small instances. It's been fun and exciting, and what's really been like a short amount of time too. But ultimately, you know, I'm happy to have done it and continue to do it as long as I'm around. And I'm happy to see Jay be able to spend as much time as he can doing what seems to be like something he really enjoys. You know, it's awesome to see that. And I'm glad, you know, because he deserves it. I'm glad for him. So if you listen to this, Jay, keep doing what you're doing, man. Proud of you. And with that, that's the end of the episode. Thank you guys so much for listening, tuning in, sharing, doing what y'all do. This wouldn't really happen without y'all, so I appreciate you continuing to support this, support me, and yeah, making this so worthwhile and rewarding. So I appreciate you listening. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you have a good rest of your day. Thanks.